Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Show. And the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. I believe that the Second Amendment makes all of the other amendments possible. And this podcast is not too political, and it's not too radical, and not too technical. Because I am not a gunsmith, I'm not ex-law enforcement, I'm not ex-military, and I'm not a firearms trainer. I'm just a private citizen. And I believe strongly in my Second Amendment rights. So I'm going to keep it real and talk about guns. So let's get started with the show.
This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com, podcasting freedom.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode number 89, cruising down the freeway again, as I often do. So I'm going to go ahead and share some listener feedback with you. That's going to be the main topic of this. And I'm getting close to the 50,000-mile mark for the year. I've actually been doing more driving lately than I thought I was going to have to. But that's my business. And you're going to hear when I talk about listener feedback some information from a listener that actually drives a whole heck of a lot more than I do. And I guess that's how he listens to a lot of the Gun Rights Radio Network podcasts. So this is going to be another one of those mixed bag of gun talk podcasts that I like to do just so I can cover listener feedback. And it's great. I love this feedback, folks. Keep it coming. Most of it is good stuff. A little bit of constructive criticism, which is good. I can handle that. No problem. A couple of errors I've made in podcasting that have been pointed out, which I'm going to cover that as well, too. So let's go ahead and dive right into it. The first thing I want to cover is an email from Doug in Montana. I don't know if I covered this one already, so I'm just going to go ahead and cover it again, just in case I didn't. But he was asking me about the XD pistols. He said he's just started recently listening to my podcast, and he enjoys it. So thank you very much, Doug. I appreciate that. He says, I've owned a Ruger 357, a Ruger P85 9mm, and currently own a Springfield XDM 40. I was wondering what your thoughts are on the XDMs and how they seem to be holding up. I've heard some podcasts, as well as you, refer to the XDs, but not the XDMs. And he says, I guess I'm just wondering if the XDM is a good choice and what's being said about them. And that comes from Doug in Montana. I have never owned nor shot an XDM. I've owned and shot a few XDs. Never shot an XDM, Doug, so I don't know. I can't comment directly on the XDs. Excuse me, on the XDMs. Are they good pistols? That is like asking if a car is a good car. There's so many opinions on that. From what I've seen and what I've owned, they're fine pistols. They're good. I just didn't like them. I just didn't like the XDs because they sit too high in my hand. I thought the recoil was just as much, if not more, compared to my Glock. I owned XDs before the M&Ps came out. I actually liked the M&P pistols better. I'm not crazy about grip safeties, but I'm not going to say that you're not well defended if you have a gun with a grip safety. I just don't see a necessity for the grip safety that's on there. And I can think of a couple of occasions, like, for example, if you are being wrestled to the ground, or if you are on the ground, or you are in a position when you're attacked where it's hard to get a complete grip on the gun, but you can still point it at the bad guy and fire it, you might not be able to depress that grip safety properly and then therefore not be able to fire your gun. Just a thought. That's just a thought that you might want to think about. I know it's probably a rare case scenario, but here's the way I think. When it comes to saving my life, I don't want to leave anything to chance. Okay? That's just my thoughts. I don't want to leave anything to chance if I can help it. I don't want to have to worry about depressing a grip safety or a thumb safety or anything like that. I want to be able to pull the gun out and shoot it no matter what kind of a grip I have. Even if it only gets off one shot, that's one shot at least that I may be able to use to defend myself. Okay? That's why I'm just a huge believer in simplicity. Having said that, lots of people love the XDs, love the XDMs. Springfield backs them with a lifetime warranty. they're good guns. So just because they're guns that don't work for me doesn't mean that they're not good guns. Okay, Doug? That's pretty much my feeling on that. And thank you, Doug, very much for sending in this question. I appreciate that. I do my best. Hopefully that is answers your question, at least from my point of view. Okay, another email here comes from David. And I don't know where he's from. But he sends me a good email. He sends me a comment on episode 85. First, he starts with a compliment of my show. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Dave. The main point of his email here says, I had a couple of comments, though. First, when you addressed the lady with parents that didn't approve of concealed carry and the father that doesn't approve of a woman concealed carrying, I thought you were too off the cuff in your response. To say something like, who cares, is not putting yourself in her shoes. These, sir, are certainly her parents, and certainly she would want to be respectful to her parents, and so would you. And based on her dad's chauvinistic position, she may actually be afraid of him. I think a better way to handle it would be to simply state her position and tell them that she is sorry that they don't understand that she is within her rights to carry a gun. He said, Bob, second, you made the statement that the 147 grain ammo, 9mm, was softer recoiling. I've often wondered the differences between 115 grain versus 124 versus 147. And he wants me to talk about the recoil. All right, let me address those two points. There's a couple of other points he makes in his email that I want to address as well. But let's first of all start. I did not mean to sound off the cuff. And after Dave sent me this email, I did go back and I listened to episode 85 again. And yeah, I can see where I may have sounded a little bit terse. Okay? And I guess what it was my own emotions taking over. That's what it was. So I apologize if it did come off that way. My own emotions would be if my parents tried to tell me that I didn't have the right to save my life. I would take offense to that. Especially if I was a woman and my dad said, because you're a woman, I don't approve of you carrying a pistol. What's up with that? I mean, come on, what is up with that? But yes, maybe I did sound a little off the cuff. Maybe that's just me and my style that came across. So I didn't mean to do that, okay? And yes, probably the best response for her, and I think that's the response she gave her parents, was that it's within her rights and she respectfully understands their opinions, but it's within her rights. And I'm sure she may listen to this and comment and chime in on the forum and maybe tell us, maybe shed some light on this, okay? But David, good point. You bring up a good point, so you're right. I didn't mean to sound off the cuff. Now, to your second point about the 147 grain soft recoiling ammo, I buy a lot of 147 grain flat nose when I'm for practice ammo. Some of it's Winchester White Box, some of it is Winchester Ranger. Some of it is subsonic. You can get some good 147 grain subsonic loads. To me, the perceived recoil is less. Even though the bullet's heavier, you might be thinking, well, how could that be? Perceived recoil, for me, is less. Because that's a subsonic round. It's traveling a lot slower. And so, to me, it does not create as much muzzle flip as the 115s. And I'll tell you what, if I shoot something like Speer Gold Dot 124 grains, or even my Corbon DPX, or even some of the Ranger, the hot-loaded Ranger ammo out there and stuff, they seem to have more muzzle flip than the 147 grains. But again, I'm comparing a practice ammo. Even with 115, like if I buy a CCI Blazer, sometimes I do buy that cheap stuff, folks. I mean, hey, I'm shooting a Glock, right? Who cares? Glocks eat up that cheap stuff, no problem, and they don't have any problems doing it. You know, hey, I've been on a budget lately. I'm cheap. Okay? And I want to practice. And it's the reason why I shoot 9mm, because it's low cost. But that CCI Blazer stuff's pretty hot. It's hot loaded. I mean, that's, you know, and when I compare that to some of the 147 grain subsonic, again, for me, perceived recoil is less. At least what I mean is I should say the perceived muzzle flip is less. Maybe that's the way I should have worded it. So you might want to check that out if you're looking for some good practice rounds that are easy to get good follow-up shots with. And the last part of Dave's email is pretty cool. He says, finally, Bob, I shot another USPSA match this Saturday and tried to have fun. My wife went with me this time, so that helped, and I enjoyed explaining things to her. I also did well until the fourth of five stages. And he went on to say he got disqualified because the range safety officer said that he swept his left hand with the muzzle of his gun as he reached to open a door. Probably one of those stages where you had to open the door first and then shoot at targets that are on the other side of the door. Those are fun stages. First of all, David, I'm sorry you got disqualified. It happens. It's never happened to me. I've never been DQ'd for a safety violation. Now, let me find some wood here in my car to knock on. Oh, shucks, I can't find any wood to knock on. Maybe if I light up a cigar, that'll keep my good luck going, right? I don't know. I'm sorry that happened to you, but I can respect that they need to adhere to strict safety rules. You know, one of the things about these games that we play, the USPSA and the IDPA, that I've said so many times, I really believe they enforce and train good gun handling skills. Note, I didn't say that it's high caliber self-defense training, but it is good gun handling skills training. One of the things is we have to keep these games safe. And, maybe I've been a little bit overly critical of some safety officers in the past. I've said that some of them are kind of anal about their safety. There's nothing wrong with that. Being anal about safety means that it continues to be open to the public, because let's face it, if these matches are run in an unsafe manner and someone gets hurt, they get shut down. And we certainly don't want that. So I guess if there's a comparison between being anal about the gun safety and the match getting shut down because someone got hurt, I guess it's probably better that we are safe. And yes, if you swept your left hand, in other words, if your muzzle pointed at your left hand, then yes, that is a problem, and that is a reason to be disqualified. Sorry that happened. Good thing to practice not doing anyway, is sweeping yourself with the gun. So, sorry that happened to you, Dave, but do me a favor. Please don't quit. Don't let that discourage you. Don't quit shooting USPSA. By the tone of your email, it doesn't sound like you're going to quit. It sounds like you're excited about going next time. Don't let that get you too discouraged. USPSA, IDPA, something everybody should do if you own a handgun. Keep it up. And I'm going to warn you about something else with these games. They're quite addicting. So go have fun. All right. Now, another listener, Christian. Christian sent me an email. He sent me emails before. Has some pretty good feedback. He was talking about the pinky pitch. Pinky pinch. When I was shooting the Glock 36, when James Kimmerly and I were at the range and we did our revolver test, and I had a chance to shoot a guy's Glock 36 while we were there. I didn't expect to have that experience, but the guy was nice enough to let me shoot his Glock 36. He says Christian said he just got done listening to that show. And he said to me, he's a consistent shooter of the Glock 36, and he says, a word of advice, when shooting the Glock 36, if you experience pinky pinch, you are gripping too tightly with the pinky. The main grip should come from the third and fourth fingers, with the pinky resting on there, not gripping it. If you happen to shoot another Glock 36, give it a try. I think you'll find that this will solve the pinky pinch problem. Good point, Kai. You know what? That's probably correct. Maybe I was gripping it too much with my pinky. And yeah, you know, whenever you grip a pistol, he's right. You know, your third and fourth fingers, that's where your primary grip comes from. And you can mess yourself up if you're gripping too tightly with all the fingers. And, you know, that's a habit to get into. So maybe I was in a bad habit of gripping too tightly with the pinky. Thanks for that advice. If I get a chance to shoot a Glock 36 again, I'm going to try that. And he's probably right. That's probably going to solve the pinky pinch problem. All right. Now, here's another bit of really good feedback, again, from another listener by the name of Dave. This is a really good email. This is a really cool story. So I'm not going to read it word for word, but I'm going to paraphrase a lot of it so that you get the main point. He says, Bob, I posted this on a local forum, and I thought I would send it to you. I like your style of podcasting, and I think you'd give me a fair answer. And well, thank you, Dave. I'm going to do the best I can here. He writes, I know you've talked about training before, but something always doesn't sit right with me. I guess maybe it's guilt. I know I should get formal training, but I have a new house, a new dog, 3 kids under 5 years old, and a wife battling with celiac disease and other food allergies. And there is no time or money, so I'm left with reading and watching videos and self-training regimens. And I also want to do it while I'm still young, agile, and have good reflexes. I'm 36, but I can still move and groove. I know over time things will get better. I wonder what he means by moving and grooving. Oh, well. I'll leave that one alone. I know over time things will get better and money will be available, but I don't want to wait until I'm 50 to do this stuff. My family is my top priority, and that's why I carry, to protect them and make sure that I come home to them every night. I take concealed carry very seriously and consider it a great responsibility. So, he says, the question is, do I think that one can do quality self-training, at least to a point? Is it better than nothing? So, Dave, first of all, once again, thank you for sending me an excellent question. I don't know if any of you listening to this show know this or not, but I have the same problem this man's wife does. I have celiac disease. And I don't want to get too far off subject here, but celiac, however you want to pronounce it, celiac disease is simply allergy to gluten, and mainly that's wheat. Mainly it's products that have wheat in them. Now, I want you to take a moment when this podcast is over to think about everything that has wheat in it. Next time you eat something, look at the ingredients of what you're eating. You'll be amazed how much has wheat in it. Having celiac disease is a death sentence if you like to eat. Trust me. It's almost impossible to go to a restaurant and find something on their menu that does not have wheat in it. Even sauces have wheat, which really makes it a real drag. And that's why I say it's a death sentence. So it's something that is tough. If you're someone who loves to eat, it's tough to deal with it. And while I'm on the road, I have to carry a lot of food and snacks with me that I know are gluten-free. And sometimes that's all I can eat. Sometimes that's all I get to do because I can't find any restaurants that serve food that is not that is gluten-free. So between the 5 kids and the new dog and the wife and everything that he's dealing with, yeah, I can understand pretty much what this guy is going through. And I have a family, too. I'm a family man. So finding time to shoot, finding the money to shoot, and finding the money to train, I struggle with a lot. I'm on a strict budget right now, a real strict budget, because I believe in being debt-free. And if I wanted to, I could have a whole bunch of guns and a whole bunch of ammo and just training out the wazoo, and then after about a year and a half, I'd be so far in debt that I'd be miserable, and I don't want to do that. So I only do what I can pay for. So do I think self-training is viable? I would have to say that yes. I think that self-training, as long as you're getting good DVDs and you're reading good stuff, like, you know, Brian Enos's book, and you're getting some good DVDs put out by good trainers, Masad Ayoub and Gabe Suarez and James Yeager and the folks at Front Sight and Tiger McKee and all the good ones out there. As long as you're reading and following information from good trainers and you go out and you practice it on your own, nothing wrong with that. I would suggest taking a partner with you. Take somebody with you if you can find a place to go do this shooting. See, that's the challenge right there. I think if you're going to do self-training, the challenge is finding a place to go do it. If you have access to land or someplace where you can go train on your own, that's great. I've got a very good friend of mine up in Oklahoma City that does that. He's a very good shooter. I mean, he's really good, and he trains himself. He's got a partner. He's got a buddy. that, and they go out to someplace. I'm not sure. They've got an arrangement work somewhere. And they're working with their AR-15s, and they're working with their pistols and their shotguns and everything all the time. And even working on some of the stuff taught by Magpul and so forth. And you know, yes, of course, Dave, that is better than no training at all. Absolutely. Now, I wrote back to him, and I asked him if he'd ever thought about IDPA or USPSA. This is another reason why I strongly recommend getting involved in the shooting sports. It's inexpensive. It doesn't cost much. And that's why I do it, folks. For $15, $20 at some clubs, plus the cost of ammo. So if I shoot 150 rounds, it's three boxes of 9mm. That doesn't cost much. And I can go out there and have fun for 4.5 to 5 hours and learn how to get better with my handgun. Where can you find a 4.5 to 5 hour session for around $30 or $40 total, plus your gas money, that's going to put you in scenarios that are somewhat realistic? I understand there's some unrealistic stuff, but they're going to put you into scenarios where you get to practice your gun handling skills. And I'm talking about performing reloads, getting good sight pictures, drawing from your holster, shooting moving targets, shooting while you're on the move, shooting while you're sitting, shooting while you're kneeling, all that stuff. Where else can you practice all that for such a low price as you can at an IDPA or a USPSA match? So, Dave, I would say combine your self-training with some of your local area competition sports, and I bet you'll find yourself improving more and more and improving your self-defense skills. That's just kind of my humble opinion. I'm so glad to hear your family is top priority, and I really like what he says, where he says that he takes concealed carry very seriously and considers it a great responsibility. The fact that the way he takes it is he's protecting his family and he's making sure that he comes home to his family every night. Amen to that, brother. I love that. I mean, that's great. That's why I carry. I want to live, and I want to be here for my family. I love that podcast, the Personal Armament podcast by Rob Robideau, where he had Dave Spaulding on there one day. And Dave said, as soon as you have a family and somebody loves you, you now give up the right to give up. I love that. You give up the right to just give up if you're in a confrontation. You have to be defended. You have to come home to your family who loves you. So that's great. You know, and Dave, thanks for sending me this question. This was an interesting question. I like it. Hopefully I answered it to the best of my ability. That's my thoughts on what you're asking. So, with that, let's take just a real quick break here. A quick musical break, a little advertisement for the Gun Rights Radio Network. And I've got a whole bunch more listener feedback here for segment number two. So, don't go away. I'll be back in just a minute.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit GunRightsRadio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
All right, back with you for segment number two, folks. Let me take a minute here to cover some announcements I forgot to cover in segment number one. First announcement, the website handgunworld.com. And if you want to contact me and send me some more of this good feedback, or if you've got constructive criticism, whatever, please contact me at bob@handgunworld.com. Also, check out my YouTube channel at Handgun World Show. And on the main page, you'll see both a Facebook and a Twitter badge at handgunworld.com. So if you want to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I'm getting better at this social media stuff. I'm kind of new to it, but I'm kind of working it out here, I think. And as always, get a hold of me on the Gun Rights Radio Network forum, start a thread, contribute to a thread, whatever. There'll be a link to all of this on the main website at handgunworld.com. Last but certainly not least, as I'm doing about 4 or 5 podcasts a month, if this helps you, if my information helps you in any way with your gun ownership or your concealed carry or your shooting and so forth, consider a small donation to the show. I have not nailed down the sponsors yet. And by the way, I'm not even sure if I'm going to do that. Thank you for the overwhelming response. A lot of you have been saying, go for it, get sponsors as long as they're good ones. I'm not sure if that's really yet what I want to do. I think I might just be more satisfied with this being a listener-supported show and not an advertiser-supported show. So having said that, if you can make a small donation to support the show, keep it going, help me pay the bills, keep me rocking and doing this, I'd be much obliged. There's a Buy Now button on there. $10 will go a long way. And if these shows are worth a couple bucks a piece to you over a two-month period or something like that, consider doing it. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to beg too much for that because this is just a lot of fun for me to do. So let's get back in here to the listener feedback. Here's an interesting one about my revolver show that I did. Let's see. This one comes from another Dave. A lot of Daves here in Minneapolis, but that's okay. He said he has to take some umbrage at my opinions on revolvers. And he makes some really good points here I didn't think about. And again, this is why I love feedback so much. Because you guys come up with stuff I don't think about. I'm no expert. I'm just some Yankee with a gun that was born in New York, raised in Wisconsin, and now I live here in Dallas, and I just talk about my passion, firearms. So I don't know everything. And I love it when you guys give me some good information like this. He says, I can't comment on the LCR because I've never shot one, but I do routinely carry a Smith & Wesson 640. The all-steel frame soaks up the recoil in all but the hottest 357 Magnum loads, and it's even fun with 38 Specials. I feel it's plenty defensive enough, and I can routinely shoot 8-inch groups at 25 yards with those dinky but accurate sights. I love the gun. Let's not forget that the 357 in a snubby is the best self-defense solution because after shot one, everyone in the immediate area is either blind or deaf. And you know, you might be right about that. One shot from a snubby 357 Magnum, and yes, I would say probably everybody within 20 feet, they are blind or deaf. You guys, I'm sure Dave has shot that quite a bit, but if you shot a snub-nosed revolver in 357 Magnum, yeah, you'll know what he's talking about there. He says, okay, let's move on to the Smith & Wesson 686. I personally own the 7-round 4-inch version. I know you liked it, but you missed the boat. Revolvers offer versatility. First, I have non-stock grips on all of my revolvers. Much easier to customize than my HK USP. And second, they deliver ammo versatility. And by the way, that's something I didn't probably do a good enough job talking about the ammo versatility of revolvers. The weapon shoots 38, 357, snake shot, hunting rounds, etc. Third, the weapon customizes to your need. The 686 comes pre-drilled for scope mounts. With the mount and scope, you've got a hunting gun, a long-range target gun, and when you buy a stock revolver, you have a bullet projecting tool. You must modify it to fit your needs. I'm turning my 686 into a home defense project gun. Low mount, low light, sights, laser grips, removed hammer spur, double action only, etc. Haven't yet started, but need to secure some funding. Anyway, best regards from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Dave. P.S., he says, I've carried the 686, and with the right holster, concealment clothing, also known as winter in Minnesota, and a 6'2", 240-pound power lifter frame, it's not that bad. I always figured that pulling out a huge stainless cannon would stop a bad guy in his tracks. All right, thank you. Thanks for sending that in, Dave. First of all, I'm not 6'2", 240-pound power lifter. I'm a 5'10", 188-pound right now, 12-ounce bottle of Budweiser lifter. That's me. Well, okay, I had to quit the Budweiser because of my celiac disease. So now I'm lifting small bottles of wine. That's about what I... and some good fine, mild Jamaican or Honduran cigars from now from time to time. That's what I lift. these days. So I don't know if I could carry that 686, as I mentioned in the podcast. But yes, I forgot about the 640. I forgot about the ammo versatility, using snake shot and all that kind of stuff in a revolver. So very, very good points, Dave. And like I said in that show, if you can get away with carrying something big like a Smith & Wesson 686 and it's no problem and it's comfortable, go for it. Seriously. I mean, that gun is a cannon. Yeah, you put good 357 loads in that, and that gun is a cannon. I didn't know about the grips. I didn't know about the ability to customize the grips on revolvers. So thanks for setting me straight on that, Dave. I appreciate it. And I guess I forgot about the all-steel-framed 640. Remember, James and I just, you know, evaluated those two revolvers. I just did not like the Ruger LCR. A lot of airplay about it, a lot of stuff been said about it, good stuff, but just doesn't do it for me. I mean, I can think of a lot better guns than the Ruger LCR that don't cost a whole lot much more than the LCR, and they would be easier to conceal, just as powerful, and have higher capacity. You see, this is kind of one of the reasons why I'm hesitating sponsors, because I want to be able to just lay it on the line and tell you what I think. But good comment, Dave. Thank you very much. Now, another piece of feedback regarding my 357 SIG episode, which, as I mentioned to you, was inspired by that great episode that the Pro Arms podcast did on the 357 SIG. And I had to go see what all the fuss was about, so I had to go rent a 357 SIG Glock and shoot it and talk about it. So Glenn sent me an email regarding that. Glenn is in Louisiana, and he just wanted to throw his 2 cents in, and it's a pretty valuable 2 cents here. He said, you mentioned that the 357 SIG is more expensive than your 9mm to shoot, and you'll get no argument from me on that. But your 357 SIG choice, if you choose to get one, should mimic your favorite size Glock in 9mm, and here's why. You will get the same sight picture, unless, of course, you've changed the sights, the same grip and the same grip angle and the same trigger pull and the same reset. You save money on not having to buy new holsters, and the only difference will be the recoil, which may be an issue with follow-up shots. Hence, you can practice all day long with the 9mm and carry the 357 SIG comfortably, knowing your learned skill sets will be utilized. That, Glenn, is a fantastic point. And I forgot to mention that. And yes, since I am so used to shooting primarily the compact size Glocks, the Glocks that are the same size as the Glock 19, Glock 23, Glock 32, and also the subcompact Glocks, because I have so much experience with those, yes, he's right. If I buy a 357 SIG, it probably should be in a Glock in the same size as my Glock 19, because that is probably what I'm going to be so used to shooting and be much more effective with. So, Glenn, thank you. That was excellent feedback. I appreciate you writing in and sending me that. See, this is good stuff, folks. Here's one more, and then I'm going to start thinking about wrapping up the show here. This one comes from Mel up in my home area. He's actually from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, not too far from Wisconsin, from Green Bay, where I grew up. So Mel from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan writes to me, says he enjoys the podcast. Thank you, Mel. Appreciate it. I listen to many of the GRRN podcasts while traveling during my day, as I'm on the road like you are in industrial sales. Very interesting that you lived in Wisconsin. I'm in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I travel into Wisconsin, Minnesota, North and South Dakota. He says to me, in a fairly recent podcast, you mentioned open carry in Wisconsin and traveling and taking off your gun and locking it in the trunk, then getting out and putting it on again. He says, I have a lockbox that I put my carry gun in when in Wisconsin, and when I get back to Michigan or Minnesota, I stop and I put the gun on. Hopefully it will all begin to change, starting with the new governor in November. Just thought I'd drop you a line and say thanks for the podcast. I really enjoy the talks with Steve Z and the book by Brian Enos. Plan to pick it up and read it along with you to get Steve's input. Well, Mel, great. You're going to love that book, and I would encourage everybody to do that, as I mentioned in the last show. Okay, sorry there, folks. I had a call come in, so my sentence here is going to be a little bit disjointed in my thought process here as I get back on track. Business first, folks. Always have to take care of business. And I'm driving, got the cell phone call going, got the podcast going. Don't worry, folks. I'm being safe. All right? I'm being safe. I only do this when I'm going down the freeway and there's not much traffic. Don't worry. I'm not going through heavy traffic doing this stuff. Okay. Anyway, Mel, yes. I hope you get that book, and I hope that everybody can get a chance to get that book and follow along with us. Now, regarding your comment about Wisconsin and the concealed carry situation up there, my home state, they just can't get their head out of their butts when it comes to concealed carry or open carry. Because, like I said, I think their open carry laws are a farce. I really do, because it's so restrictive, and you have to go through so much crap just to be unloading your gun every time you get in your car and all that, and reloading it when you get out of your car. And what a bunch of, you know, garbage. Yes, I hope that there is a change in governor there. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, Mel, but didn't Wisconsin legislature actually did pass concealed carry? Did they not? And the governor vetoed it. So I think it's now time for all of my friends and relatives up there in Wisconsin and the voting body to veto the governor right now who's there and fire him. Veto his job and bring somebody else in there that believes that citizens in Wisconsin should have the right to defend themselves. Thank you, Mel, for sending that in, and thank you for giving me some information about that subject. Now, this next one is going to be the last question that I talk about on this show, and there's more, but I'm going to save it for another show coming up. This one comes from William here in the Dallas area, and this is an interesting question. This is one I had to think about for quite some time so that I could give an answer here that makes sense, that doesn't get me into trouble, and and is a solution. I got to read you this email. I'm not going to read it word for word, but you got to hear this, folks, because it's really, it's well worded, and it's a really good question that I've never considered before. And by the way, I've had a chance to come to a stop here in my travels. So now that I'm at a stopping point in my travel, it's going to give me a better chance to do this. He said, "Bob, this is my first time contacting you, and I have a question. But first, I'd like to give you a little background. My name is William. I live in I live in Denton, Texas, just west of where you are, and I'm 26 years old. Like you, I drive between Texas and Oklahoma every day. I'm a medical supplies courier. I run a line haul from Denton to Tulsa and make several deliveries. This adds up to a little over 175,000 miles a year. Man, I thought I was driving a lot by driving about 50,000 miles a year. Holy cow, this guy's doing some driving." And he says he's listened to every episode of the Handgun World Show. Thanks, William. I appreciate that. As well as many of the other podcasts, mostly on the Gun Rights Radio Network. And he says mine ranks up in the top five with those that he listens to. Well, thank you. I appreciate the compliment. All right. He's also got a fourth generation Glock 19 that he just recently purchased. And he's thinking about getting a Dale Fricke appendix carry holster after listening to me praise it quite a bit. He's also been looking at the Comptac and the Crossbreed and so on and so forth. Now, here's his cool question. He says, "Bob, I know that you have the Texas concealed carry license, and also we know that here in Texas as the CHL, concealed handgun license. And he also points out the fact that I have a Utah non-resident and a Florida non-resident concealed carry license." And that's true. I've talked about that on the show before a couple times, and I've explained to people why I have those two licenses as well. So here's his question. He says he's planning on getting the Utah permit because it's easier to get and cheaper than the Texas permit, and he knows both Texas and Oklahoma will honor honor that license. But something still tells me that it'd probably be better off if I got my Texas license. I figured since you have both permits and you also drive between Texas and Oklahoma, that you'd be the best person to ask, can you think of any reason why I should get the Texas permit instead of Utah's? And that, William, is a very interesting question. Here's what I'm going to say about that. Get the Texas license. I'll tell you why. I'm a big believer in training. And to get the Utah concealed carry license, you barely even have to shoot a gun at all. And, you know, I have heard that there are Utah licensed instructors that give it without hardly any training, and sometimes they give it without someone even shooting a gun. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Bob, we shouldn't have to have a license. It's our constitutional right to carry, the Second Amendment, so on and so forth. Well, you folks know I'm a huge, huge believer in the Second Amendment. I mean, I wouldn't have staged the Freedom Raffle, and I wouldn't have raised money for the Second Amendment Foundation like I did, and the Gun Rights Radio Network like I did, if I wasn't a huge believer in the Second Amendment. At the same time, I'm a believer in training. Now, I'll say this. I do think it's unconstitutional that we even have to have a license. Okay? I'll say that right up front. It's unconstitutional that we should have to have a license to practice our Second Amendment rights, to exercise our rights. Excuse me. We should not have to have a damn license to exercise our Second Amendment rights. That's unconstitutional. But you know, it is what it is. And one of the good things about requiring people to get their license is the instructor does get a chance to tell them about when to and when not to use their firearm, and at least the instructor does get to witness that they have some resemblance of knowing what to do with a gun, although I question that. I actually wish that the shooting requirements to get your CHL were a lot more stringent than they are. And so what I'm going to go ahead and advise William to do is to go ahead and get the Texas license. First of all, it supports the state of Texas. All right? Now, whether that's important to you or not, I don't know, but that's important to me. I like to support the state that I live in. I'm not saying you'd be illegal by getting the Utah license. You could get the Utah license and be perfectly legal to carry your handgun in the states of Texas and Oklahoma. But here's another reason why I would get the Texas license. What if the laws change? What if all of a sudden, for some reason, Texas decides that they're not going to honor the Utah and Florida non-resident permits anymore? I would think, if they're going to think about making a change in that law, I would think that they would probably make the change with regards to non-resident licenses, probably not accepting the non-resident licenses from other states anymore. Okay, that's kind of where I would think if some of the numbskulls in government decide that they are going to try to restrict that kind of reciprocity stuff, to me, I think that might be where they would go first. Of course, if you have a license issued by Texas, then of course they're not going to reject their own license, I hope. So you might want to think about that. Just in case the reciprocity laws change, you never know who's going to end up being governor or being in the state legislature or what they're going to, you know, decide to do. And another thing you might want to think about, William, is police officers. Most police officers in Texas and Oklahoma clearly understand the concealed carry laws, and most of them clearly understand that a Texas or an Oklahoma license is good in either of these states. They may not understand that a Utah non-resident license is valid. And even though it is, even though you're not breaking a law, even though you'd be legally carrying your firearm, you might end up wrangling with a cop, not physically, but you might end up having to justify yourself to a police officer that doesn't understand the law. And yes, there are police officers that don't understand the laws. Again, I'm not picking on cops. I love police officers. Please don't say that I'm cop bashing, but I'm telling the truth here, folks. I'm telling the truth. There are police officers, especially when it comes to carrying guns, that are not understanding of all the laws. So to avoid that kind of a discussion with a police officer that may stop you while you're carrying your gun, William, It may also, for that reason alone, be a good idea to have your Texas license instead of your Utah non-resident. As I've mentioned, the reason I got those other two concealed carry licenses is because I can. Because I can and I wanted to. I wanted to contribute to the numbers in as big a way as I could contribute. And I figured I'm only one person, but now I count as three. Okay? I'm only one guy, but I count as three people that are licensed. Because I have three different licenses. Maybe that's bizarre thinking. I don't know. Call me crazy. But I wanted to stand up and be counted three times as a person who wants to lawfully carry a concealed handgun for my self-protection. So because I can and because I wanted to be counted. So, William, you might want to consider getting both. The Utah license is cheap to get. It doesn't cost much. It's very easy. So get the Texas one first and then get the Utah one second. That's my humble opinion, and those are some of the reasons why I recommend that. And so that's going to wrap up this episode. Relatively short compared to what I've been putting out, but I wanted to address some excellent feedback. Keep it coming, please, folks. I very much appreciate it. So thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Handgun World Show. My name is Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Catch you next time. Have a great one, and don't forget to send me those comments. Goodbye.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.